Welcome into Words with Wallace. I'm your host, Nick Wallace. Coming at you, it is Monday, April 8th. What is going on, everybody? Apologies for the delay in getting you guys this episode. I'm sure you were clamoring for the usual once-a-week Words with Wallace episode. I did take a couple extra days to record because I wanted to get back into the schedule of recording on Mondays. And just wanted to give it a little bit more time, catch up on watching some games and whatnot. And as you can see by the title of this episode, frankly, I don't even know what I'm going to call it, so probably shouldn't have said that. But I just have a bunch of random thoughts that I want to get to. Some teams that have been hot that I want to talk about. Some teams that have been very cold I want to talk about. Some just different observations from, you know, watching an entire season of NBA basketball. And a couple bigger picture conversations I kind of want to get into as well. So this is really just my last chance to go over whatever I want to talk about before we really dial in on playoff mode on the podcast. It is my pod and I can do whatever I want, so I'm taking full advantage of that today. But obviously, with the schedule of events coming up, we do have the NBA regular season winding down in basically less than a week. The final regular season game will be played. Then we're looking at the play-in and then, of course, the playoffs. So I am going to be giving out my NBA awards picks on the next episode. Going to, of course, do a playoff preview and give out all of my picks and predictions on that end of things as well. But that being said, we do have plenty to talk about today because it has been a busy few weeks in the NBA. And just for basketball as a whole, I did just want to say, shout out college basketball. I know I haven't been watching it. I'm literally recording this as the men's national championship is going on. I should wrap this up by the end of the game to see the second half and whatnot. But I haven't been super dialed in on either the men's or the women's tournament for that matter, just because I am trying to watch, obviously, as much NBA as possible while working a full-time job. But that being said, I did just want to shout out women's college basketball specifically. I didn't want to be totally remiss in not mentioning the women's college basketball revolution that's going on right now. It is just really cool to see. I dialed in for a few of the Final Four games and then the national championship, at least parts of it yesterday. You know, it's not my cup of tea, just college basketball as a whole. As I've mentioned, NBA is definitely more my speed, but it is really cool to see a interest in the women's game like I've never seen before. People and, like, the discourse online is clearly there. Like, you know, all these girls in college have, like, real haters, like, judging their field goal percentages, judging the shot selection, you know, the officiating of Caitlin Clark and her teams and everything like that. Like, there's just real discourse around it, and obviously, some of that discourse is negative, but that's just going to happen. Like, you know, women's college basketball has officially arrived. If there are, you know, the moronic arguments you see for NBA and NFL, if those same arguments are happening for women's college basketball, that means we're in the right place because those people just come along with whatever is popular. So it is just really cool to see all the attention going toward that. The viewership on ESPN is through the roof, so you gotta love to see that. And hopefully that kind of transitions smoothly into more attention toward the WNBA as well. So that's talking college basketball. Let's keep it pushing to the NBA stuff that you guys are here for. And I did have the luxury of being at the Mavericks game in Dallas on Friday night. The Golden State Warriors were in town. So for me, this was huge. It was my first opportunity to ever see Steph Curry play in person. As you guys know, my favorite player ever. So that was really, really special for me to see just like that cool, like pinch me effect, feeling like a little kid all over again as I saw Steph for the first time. Didn't make it early enough for warm-ups and the whole routine, but was pretty close to the action, so that was awesome to see. I was kind of expecting the game to have more playoff implications than what it ultimately did. Warriors actually took care of business the night before. They murdered the Rockets, so the Rockets are officially eliminated from the playoffs, and the Warriors are basically locked into the 10 seed in the West at this point in time. The Mavericks might have actually needed it more since they are kind of jockeying for position in the Western standings. They might have a chance to creep up to the 4 seed and pass the Clippers there. It really just ended up being Kyrie versus Steph because Luka was kind of ruled out last second with some sort of injury, which was kind of surprising to see. Steph versus Kyrie, two of my favorite players to watch in the entire league, and frankly, in a league full of extremely skilled players, I think those two guys are the most skilled in the entire NBA. Ended up being like the PJ Washington legacy game, which wasn't really on my bingo card there. I know he had like 32 points in his best game as a Dallas Maverick, including the last second shot that gave them the lead with 4 seconds left in the game. Ultimately, Golden State had a chance to win it, and Klay ended up bricking the open three after they double-teamed Steph, but it was a really exciting game. Definitely encourage you guys to watch the highlights of that if you haven't already. So always good to be down and watching Mavericks games in person. I wish I could go to more games than I did. If I lived a little bit closer to the arena, it would probably be a different story. But the reason I was able to make it out was actually because of my partners at work. They're called Toros. And it was really cool to see that they extended me a ticket when they really did not need to, but they brought me to the game. They are an official partner of the Dallas Mavericks. They make phone cases as well as neck air conditioners, which are essential for folks out here in the Dallas area that work outside. You guys know just how hot it can get. So definitely shout out Toros. They had a really awesome on-site activation as well with their booth in which they raised money for autism awareness. For every person that participated in the game that they were playing on site at their booth, they donated $1 to autism awareness, which is a fantastic cause. And so definitely encourage you guys to check it out if you are in need of phone cases, if you're in need of a personal neck air conditioning unit. Definitely recommend Tauros and checking out tauroslife.com. We're going to keep things pushing to NBA stonks. NBA stocks, of course, teams that are trending up and teams that are trending down over the last couple weeks, because I think there were a few teams that I really wanted to talk about and was trying to figure out the best way to work them into this podcast. And let's just keep things on the Mavericks here, because they've actually been on fire and have basically taken the title of the new hottest team in the NBA after the Rockets have kind of fallen apart the last couple games. But that being said, they're 10-1 in their last 11 games. And back to Kyrie, I mean, that was really the number one thing that I took away from being that close in person, was I was kind of along the baseline, which I had never sat before. I'm not usually in the lower level to begin with, but especially on the baseline, it kind of gave like a more unique perspective of the game and just the lateral quickness of these players and the directions that they move when they're handling the ball. Had a much better angle on some of the ball handling moves and just some of this offensive sets than what you would get in a traditional game watching experience, whether it be on TV or even having like a sideline seat at an NBA game. And just how amazed I am with Kyrie, the basketball player, was taken to a new level. I mean, you could say that about Steph as well, but Kyrie's ability to get to the hoop and just in general, the shots he was creating for his teammates as well, he's really just playing his best basketball that he has in years, and it just led to really great shots for the Mavericks down the stretch in that game. I know that the Mavericks are missing Lively for at least a few weeks, and they really haven't seen those effects. I mean, Gafford, for what he's been able to bring to the table at the trade deadline, I really love that pickup. He's a traditional inside presence, a shot blocker, a rebounder, somebody that can finish lobs at a really high level. He's been really the perfect replacement to the minutes that Lively gave them earlier in the season, and I actually think he gives them a bit more on the defensive end. Obviously, when Lively gets back in the rotation, they should still have a spot for him, even in the playoffs, but I would expect him to play less minutes than Gafford in general. I'm not sold on PJ Washington still. I know he's had a hot couple of games. I don't really trust him as like a traditional third option for that Mavericks team. I think the third option for them, obviously besides Luka and Kyrie, is going to change on a night-to-night basis. Like, I could see Tim Hardaway still getting hot in a couple playoff games. I could see PJ Washington stepping into that role. I could see guys like Dante Exum stepping up and hitting some big shots. So you really never know with that team who's going to be that kind of third guy. But when you have Luka, who's playing at an MVP level, Kyrie that's playing outstanding, I don't think they really need a quote-unquote third guy or to complete a makeshift big three for them to make some noise in the playoffs. I mean, they're as hot as any team in the league right now. If they get matched up with the Clippers, which is looking like they are, it's really hard for me to pick the Clippers in that series. I'll do some more research and pay attention to the last regular season week of action that we have here. But the Mavericks are on fire, man. So just wanted to point out that kudos to them. It does seem like the moves that they made at the trade deadline has given this team a huge boost. I still think they got a little ambitious with that PJ Washington deal, but the Gafford move is solid and the team's playing at a really high level. On the other side of the coin, we have to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks, because their stock is all the way down. They're 1-6 in their last 7 games, and in that stretch that includes consecutive losses to the Wizards, Grizzlies, and Raptors. So three teams that are obviously terrible and have absolutely nothing to play for at this point in the season. And that also brings them to under 500 with Doc Rivers as their head coach. That is quite the difference from their record with head coach Adrian Griffin, who was 30-13 at the time of being fired. In fairness to the Bucks, I know the 1-6 record in their last 7 looks terrible, but they have dealt with a lot of injuries in that stretch. All of their big three, if you will, Dame, Giannis, and Chris Middleton, all missing games in that stretch. But when I look at the Bucks, I just think that their biggest flaw is an overall lack of perimeter defense. It's kind of been the same story on that team all year long. Like, I know they went out and got Patrick Beverley, but he's still not going to be able to do anything against a guy like a Jason Tatum, a guy like a Jimmy Butler in playoff games, things of that nature. He's just too small to guard up. And a lot of what Pat Bev does is more for show than it is something that actually results in actual stops, especially in the playoffs. So I just think that they still have a ton of holes on defense, and frankly, their role players are playing significantly worse than really any other version of this Bucks team that we're used to seeing, like with the exception of Bobby Portis, who has been playing incredibly well for the Bucks really all season long. So shout out Bobby Portis. But beyond that, I just feel like the collective boost that they're getting from guys like Jay Crowder, who looks like he's basically washed at this point in time. Pat Connaughton isn't playing great basketball. Malik Beasley is like a shooter that can't really shoot all that well. He's only shooting like 33% from three over their recent stretch of games. So I just don't really know what any of those guys are going to bring to the table. Now, if Middleton, Giannis, and Dame are playing their best basketball on the offensive end of the court, I guess they don't really need much from those guys. But it does just seem like if one of their guys is missing a game, if one of their guys, you know, Dame, from what we've seen from him at this point in his career, like, he can still be really good on any given night, but he's just not as consistent as what he once was. So that being said, it is nice to have those guys, those role players, be able to hit a big shot and fill in like a 15, 20 point game in a pinch. It just doesn't seem like they're ever going to get that from the Bucks at this point in time. So the Bucks are looking really tough, but they are still the 2 seed in the East, and they are still the team that scares me the most as a Boston Celtics fan. So just worth noting that the Bucks are trending in the wrong direction. We'll see if they're able to hold on to the 2 seed with less than a week of games to go. The next team that I want to talk about that's actually trending in the right direction, in my opinion, is New Orleans Pelicans. Now, you can make fun of me for saying that because they are 4-6 in their last 10 games, which obviously isn't great. But you have to remember they've been missing Brandon Ingram for a decent stretch of games there, and they are expected to get him back pretty soon. But the reason that I'm so high on the Pelicans is what I've seen from Zion in the past couple games has been amazing. Like, I do feel like this is the best version of Zion that we've seen from him in his entire career. And the nice thing for Pelicans fans is it's actually at the most important time. Like, we haven't seen a healthy Zion in the playoffs for quite some time. And he's actually doing it on both ends of the court. I actually was dialed in for the Suns-Pelicans game yesterday, and he had 4 blocks, all of, like, chase-down variety in which he entered the play out of nowhere. And it really just makes you question, like, why he hasn't averaged, like, 2 or 3 blocks a game his entire career at this point. But he looks really motivated. He looks a lot lighter. He looks incredibly fluid going to the basket. And so with this version of Zion as clearly their number one option on offense and the role players that they have and the supporting cast of the Pelicans that I've been gassing up all year, I would really not want to play the Pelicans in the playoffs. So just wanted to note that the Pelicans are trending in the right direction. And the last team that we're going to talk about in this exercise is the Cavs, who are trending in the wrong direction for sure. They're 3-7 in their last 10 games. And really that stretch in which they were like 17-1 or 17-2, something like that, a couple months ago, that really looks like an anomaly at that point. Like, they were missing for Darius Garland for a huge chunk of those games. They were missing Evan Mobley as well. And so Mitchell was really just carrying the team. But at least they had, like, an identity during this stretch. Like, Mitchell's cooled off quite a bit. Garland's really just not had it going all season long. Now Mobley's back in the mix. But it really, they have, like, 2 different issues with their team, right? Like, there's a Mitchell-Garland thing where they still don't play together in a way that complements each other's game very well. Same thing with Mobley and Jared Allen. Like, when those two are on the court together, they just don't have the spacing that you'd want to see from a team that you think can make some noise in the playoffs. So it does seem like the Cavs are in the midst of another down season. I know, credit the JB Bickerstaff for being able to make it work with all the injuries that they dealt with, but they're settling in as a 5 seed in the East. I mean, they easily could creep up all the way to the 2 seed, but again, I just would not be scared of playing Cleveland in the playoffs is my overall thought on that team right now. And so as I was preparing for this episode and looking at some of the teams that were trending in the right direction, trending in the wrong direction, what became increasingly obvious to me as I was looking at the standings is, holy shit, the West is so much better than the East, especially at this point in time. And I just wanted to dive into exactly how much disparity there is between the two conferences, because there's actually 63 more total wins in the Western Conference than the Eastern Conference. And I know that that is a kind of a hard number to wrap your head around, like total wins, but I assure you that's a lot. Like, a 63 more wins for an entire conference shows that it's not just the teams at the top that are better in the Western Conference. It's really the conference all the way through. Like, you know, the East has more bottom-feeding teams. They have more teams that you would just write off completely. And I think it's also just interesting to note, like, teams like the Mavericks and the Clippers that have had kind of up-and-down seasons, they would both comfortably be the 2 seed in the Eastern Conference if they were in the East right now. Meanwhile, they are the 4 and 5 seeds, respectively, in the Western Conference. So I just wanted to point out that there is a huge discrepancy in talent between the two conferences and total record, all that stuff that I really didn't see coming. Like, I definitely would have picked before the season that I thought the West had more talent and that they'd have more overall deeper rosters and more competitive teams. But it is a lot worse than what you would expect, or I expected heading into the season. Now, is it as bad as the East was during that stretch between 2015 and 2018, where you could literally just pencil in whatever team LeBron was on for like over a decade? It's definitely not that bad, but it is pretty bad. Like, I think the most telling stat that I could use to illustrate the disparity between the conferences is that of the 11 best teams in the NBA right now, at this moment in time, the 11 best teams, I think 9 of them are in the Western Conference. Like, I would take the Celtics, obviously. For the sake of this exercise, I'm still putting the Bucks there. Again, I know that they're 1-6 in their last 7, but it's still the Bucks, the version of the team that they can be. I think they're right there. But in the Western Conference, every single team in the playoffs or the play-in, 9 of those 10, I would take over every single team in the East, not name the Celtics or the Bucks. Like, you can literally go down the standings, and every single one of those teams I would take over the East. Like, Timberwolves, Nuggets, Thunder, Clippers, Mavericks, Suns, Pelicans, not the Kings, because they're really banged up and playing bad basketball right now. And then the Lakers and the Warriors, I think every single one of those teams has as much talent and is a better team than anyone in the East, not named the Celtics or the Bucks. Like, I'd take them over all those teams, over the Magic. I'd take them over the Knicks. I'd take them over the Heat. I'd take them over the Sixers. It is what it is. However, as a Celtics fan, and I know we've just moonwalked and we clinched the best record in the NBA for over a week now, I did just want to talk about them for 2 seconds, because there is still a world in which they get completely screwed over as far as a really tough road to the playoffs. And I know I'm kind of talking out of both sides of my mouth here. But that being said, we're likely at this point going to draw either Miami or Philadelphia in round one. Miami, who just got Tyler Hero back, and I think overall is the third best team in the East at this point in time. Like, that would obviously be a brutal first round matchup for the Celtics. Or you play Philadelphia, who just got Joel Embiid back, by the way, which is kind of crazy that we're talking about Embiid being back when just a couple of weeks ago I heard rumors of them considering shutting him down for the season. So that's obviously very different than the result that we got. So the Celtics playing one of those two teams in round one would be brutal. Then, meanwhile, they could easily match up with the Knicks in round two, who are a really frisky team. And I know the Knicks did just lose Julius Randle for the whole season. I think at this point, it can't have been that much of a surprise to Knicks fans that he's going to be out for the rest of the season with a shoulder injury that's going to require surgery. They were really trying to dance around that and find any other option where he could come back without surgery. That didn't end up being the case, but the Knicks are still a really gritty team, coached by Tom Thibodeau. They actually are deeper than what they've been in past years, and they did just get OG Anunoby and Mitchell Robinson back into their rotation as well. And you could even make the argument that they're a better defensive team without Julius Randle. So that's a team that could really just beat the shit out of the Celtics for 5 or 6 games. And then even if the Celtics advance to round three, which I certainly hope they do, they could end up facing the Bucks. So I know that the East is a lot weaker, but there are still those like select teams on the outskirts that I think could be really competitive. It's really just my overall disappointment in like the middle of the pack for the Eastern Conference. Like teams like the Magic, the Cavs, the Pacers that I just really don't take seriously. But again, it is what it is. You can control what you can control. So hopefully the Celtics will find a way to get out of a weaker Eastern Conference. Moving on, my original plan for this episode was actually going to be to talk about Victor Wembanyama, because again, the Spurs are well out of the playoffs. They've been eliminated for a while now. And obviously, as you guys know, I've been on the Wemby bandwagon from day one and really enjoyed watching him all season. And he's been even better over the last, you know, 10 or so games. I think over his last 15 games, actually, he's averaging 24 points a game, 12 rebounds, 6 assists, and 5 blocks. And in that stretch as well, just like the individual matchups and the ins and outs of watching the Spurs most nights, like he had a down-to-the-wire game against Jokic. Now, granted, the Nuggets were missing Murray in that game, but still, him playing alongside Jokic and holding his own for the most part. I mean, Jokic was easily the better player at that game and definitely got the best of Wemby, but there were still some moments where like he blocked some of Jokic's shots that nobody else in the NBA would have had a chance at contesting, let alone blocking the shot. He had a 40-20 game against the Knicks within the past couple of weeks, in which Brunson had like 60-something on the other end. And then most recently, last night, he actually had 33 points, 18 rebounds, 6 assists, and 7 blocks against the 76ers. So he's really stepping into his own. Like, it's just night and day compared to what I saw from Wemby the first few months of the season. Like, he's just so much more fluid. He's obviously way more confident. Like, the confidence is probably the most notable thing, because you can just tell, like, some of the gusto. Like, he's like, we're not playing for anything. Like, you know, any shot that I take is probably our team's best chance of scoring. So, you know, obviously the shot selection is still questionable overall and some of the pull-ups and everything like that. But some of like the wow moments, the highlight plays, the confidence for him to step back, create his own shot off the dribble is something that we've literally never seen before from somebody of his size. And really what I've seen, I think the biggest improvement overall is his passing. Like, he's really put it together, especially like most recently over the last like 10, 15 games where like, again, he's so damn tall that, like, he can see over everybody. Like, the same effect that Jokic has where, again, not only is he, like, the best big man passer in the NBA, he's just the best passer we have in the league, period. And part of that advantage that Jokic has is that he's tall enough to see over defenses, really make a read without being bothered by most defenders on the court. Like, Wemby has that effect, like, times two, because he's literally another 7 inches taller than Jokic or whatever it is. Like, he can see over literally everybody at the court, and the reads are just so much easier when you're at that vantage point, and he's really starting to put it together. He had an insane play where he was, like, basically triple-teamed in a last-second attempt for the Spurs, in which they forced the inbounds pass to him anyway, as they probably should, and he made a really smart read, a tap pass to an open shooter who ended up tying the game and forcing overtime. So, Wemby's come along a long way. And I was just thinking of just how impressed I am with Wemby as a whole. Again, the stats are there. The eye test is there. Obviously, the team success isn't there. But still, I'm like, he's easily the rookie of the year. That much is solid. Like, shout out Chet. He's had a good season, but it's not even close. It's obviously going to be Wemby for rookie of the year. That's the only award pick I will give away on this podcast. But accepting the fact that he's rookie of the year, it made me ask the question, is this the best rookie season that anyone has had in the history of the NBA? Did research for about 45 seconds. The answer is a resounding hell no. Hell no, it is not the best rookie season ever. And we're going to talk about why. Wes Unseld and Wilt Chamberlain both won MVP and Rookie of the Year in their first season. Pretty insane. Magic Johnson won Finals MVP as a rookie in 1980. Oscar Robertson literally stepped into the NBA and immediately averaged a 30-point triple-double off the rim. Kareem's team, when they drafted him, won 30 more games with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar than they did the previous season. And that's just a few hand-picked examples. Like, just six guys that I can straight up say had better rookie seasons than Victor Wembanyama. And that kind of led me to my point, like a recent trend that's been pissing me off on Twitter. My next, you know, beer in the six-pack, if you will, for the sake of this exercise that we're going to be talking about here today. The whole, we're done with the 90s trend, whatever you want to call it, on Twitter, on social media, whatever, which it, for those that are not informed on what I'm talking about here, like, there's kind of a trend going on saying, you know, people saying that they're done with the 90s, or the 90s are over, or whatever you want to call it. It's probably some trend that was started by, like, a LeBron Hive, like, Twitter account, cult group, whatever, that really just disrespects players of all previous generations of the NBA. It's mainly directed at Michael Jordan and the 90s as a whole, because, again, LeBron fans are just so insecure and so intimidated by Michael Jordan, they do anything they can to belittle the entire era that he played in. And I just, it really drives me nuts. Like, I'm not even, like, so, like, Team Jordan or Team Old Head or whatever you want to call it. Like, I just do appreciate basketball. I actually should go back and watch older games more than I do, but I'm a busy guy. I have a lot going on. Plenty to talk about with the league that's currently going on. But there's just so many people out there that just are in this mode where they, everything that they're experiencing has to be the best. Like, people call things like, oh, this is the best ice cream I've ever had. This is the best burger I've ever had. It's the best day I've ever had. Best year I've ever had. Like, you know, the best basketball we've ever seen, like, whatever. And, like, some of that might be true. Like, yes, sometimes you're going to come across things that are, in fact, the best. But most of the time, like, people just call things the best for, like, lack of words in their vocabulary to describe things, right? Like, it's just laziness and the ease to just explain to somebody, oh, yeah, it's the best. Like, it's obviously an exaggeration, right? But I think that, like, sets into people's head where they actually think it's true, where they actually think everything that is going on right now in 2024 is better than it's ever been. And that is just simply not the case. Like, in a vacuum, in a nutshell, like, I've even been on record of saying, like, this is the most talented the NBA has ever been. And that is true. Like, the average player in this generation, he really does shit on the average player in every other generation, every other version of NBA basketball that we've seen. Like, I'm not going to deny that. But a lot of that is literally just evolution, right? Like, how athleticism has evolved, how all the knowledge and the resources we have now have evolved, how the game has changed and the education around the game and the basketball IQ of the entire community has collectively evolved. And rule changes as well has a lot to do with it. And so there's a lot of different reasons as to why the basketball now is better. And I think it's important to, like, kind of understand and just quickly recap that before we just start shitting on every single player that played before we were born or whatever. Like, again, the three-point line wasn't even around until 1979. So that, like, just radically changes the spacing and the philosophy behind, you know, not just games in 1979 and before, but even, like, the early versions of the three-point line is so different than modern basketball. Like, you really, it cannot be overstated how much of a difference that makes, and I know that that's an obvious one. Not only that, the level of contact that is required for something to be considered a defensive foul has basically decreased every single year of the NBA. Like, it's not a perfect graph, and I'm sure that there might be some data that disputes that or whatever, but from what I've seen in my history of watching older games, older tapes, whatever, is that, like, again, the contact that you could get away with as a defensive player in, like, 1950 and then 1960, 1970, 1980, 1990, and etc., Like, that's decreased every single year. So there are the advantages that the offense has in the modern NBA, like the contact that is required for that where a defensive player is allowed to make is at an all-time low, right? Like, it just seems like you blow on somebody these days and it's a foul, right? Like, they actually have made some rule changes recently, which we've talked a little bit about how, again, I just feel like the games have been more physical since the All-Star break than it was before this season. But again, overall, era to era, the contact that is required for something to be considered a defensive foul has basically decreased every single year, every single era. And then most importantly, like, the biggest rule change that, like, is crazy when you watch, like, a lot older tape, like tape in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, like, the biggest rule around carrying the basketball, like, you can make fun of how guys in older eras used to dribble and how, like, you know, oh, if Kyrie played in the 60s, like, it would be witchcraft. Like, absolutely right. Like, again, Kyrie is so skilled and all that stuff, whatever. He would get called for a carry literally every single play. Like, you can make fun of the guys for dribbling out like this. If you're watching on YouTube, I'm giving a visual here. That being said, that's kind of how you had to do it. That's how you had to do it, because any sort of contact with your hand, even going on the side of the basketball, was called to carry, even up through the 1980s and even into the 90s a little bit as well. That's kind of when, from what I've seen, they started getting more lenient with that. But, like, that just totally changes the way that people dribble the ball, the way people call plays, the way people initiate offense is all changed based on what you're allowed to do with the basketball in your hands. And so that just kind of brings me back to the point that, like, the truly special players in every era, like, if you're going to make fun of an era of basketball, like, you can make fun of some of the role players and some of the guys that were, like, one-trick ponies in previous eras of basketball, but, like, the truly special players would dominate in any era. Like, Hakeem Olajuwon would enter the NBA today and immediately become, in my opinion, the most individually skilled big man in the NBA. I'd take him over Joel Embiid. I'd take him over Jokic just in what he can do to create a shot for himself. Creating for others is a different story. But that's how I feel about Hakeem. Like, Shaq enters the NBA now. He is still just as physically dominant, maybe even more physically dominant now than what he was in the 2000s. Like, at least you had, like, bigger dudes that just existed on teams back then that could hold their own, like, a little bit. Like, who, like, half the teams in the NBA right now, like, what happens when he plays Houston tomorrow night and he's going against Jabari Smith at center, who's, like, 198 pounds? Like, I think we all know what's going to happen if you put Shaq up against him. I see people all the time. The number one guy who gets, you know, disparaged the most on social media has to be Larry Bird, right? Like, Larry Bird would still be a fucking problem in today's NBA. Like, Joe Ingles is out there having a career. Shout out Joe Ingles, man. Joe Ingles can barely move at this point in time for the Orlando Magic. And he has had a successful NBA career. Bojan Bogdanovic, let's go with him as well. You can put him in that group playing for the Knicks right now. Like, if those guys can still make it in the NBA, what do you think Larry Bird would be doing in an era in which he's allowed to just take 9 threes a game? Like, it would be insane. And then, like, guys like Jordan and Kobe, if you want to get more recent, I think they could literally average 40 with the increased scoring and the rule changes and everything like that. So, I get it. It's fun, and it's an easy argument to make fun of players from older era, especially if you want to go, like, the time machine argument route, right? Like, oh, well, if you took Bill Russell from 1960 and then put him in a time machine and then put him into today's NBA, like, he wouldn't even be a backup center. He wouldn't even sniff a D1 basket. It's like, dude, shut up. Like, if you're going to make that argument, we're like, okay, we're putting him in a time machine and we're doing this, we're doing that. Like, let's just make some stipulations to that, right? Like, let's make sure that, first of all, we're giving them the same rules that exist in today's NBA so they can, you know, tweak their game and actually handle a basketball properly. And, like, you know, anytime somebody blows on them, it's a foul going their way, right? Can we also give them, like, you know, YouTube and, like, the internet for them to, like, learn other things and learn from clips and learn drills and learn, you know, just the way that other greats of previous eras played the game? Like, can they just have, like, an online encyclopedia that they can just download, like every single other player in the NBA can do right now? Like, can we also give them year-round coaching and training and, like, dietary coaches and everything like that? Like, dudes like Larry Bird and Bill Russell had, like, a summer job, dude. Like, they literally had, like, they were, in some cases, professionals in other areas of their career. They were, like, Larry Bird is, like, notoriously famous, like, having his career cut short because he was, like, paving his, like, parents' driveway or some shit. Like, dude's literally, like, laying brick in the offseason, just ruining his spine forever. Like, that shit just doesn't happen in today's NBA. And then also, obviously, while we're at it, let's just give them modern medicine. That way their careers don't last, like, 8 years. They last, like, 20, like they do now, right? So, again, this is a rant. It turned into a rant. I wasn't really expecting that to, like, happen, but it is what it is. That being said, like, let's just put a little bit more respect on the older eras of basketball, right? Again, to recap, there's been a lot of changes, not just the overall talent, but like the rules, how the game has evolved, etc., the special players would make it in any era of basketball, and just in general, like, if we didn't have all those guys, and I'm sounding really old right now, like, if we didn't have all those special players hanging from the rafters that you see on the court for, like, the NBA 75 celebration a couple years ago, like, if we didn't have all those guys, and I know I just picked a very select few names, there's plenty of other NBA legends out there for you guys to look up and learn more about and watch YouTube on, all that stuff, whatever, but you don't have to go back and watch that tape. You don't have to do all that. But what you do have to do as an NBA fan and somebody that engages in NBA discourse is, like, for starters, just try to only make comps to players that you've actually seen. Like, I don't want to see, like, a video of Embiid, like, doing, like, a Hezzy dribble pull-up from the free throw line and being like, Akeem Olajuwon could never. It's like, if you didn't watch Akeem Olajuwon, then don't talk about Akeem Olajuwon. Like, that's fine. Like, say Eric Dampier would never. Like, sure, he wouldn't ever. But that being said, we don't have to just, like, bring in some legend of the game that you didn't watch just to make the comp sound a little bit better. Like, that's because then you just come across as naive and ignorant, which you are. And so you don't need, in general, you just don't need to diminish past eras to lift up the guys that you like watching, to lift up the players that you want to support. You can totally be a LeBron guy. Like, LeBron has reached the status of considering him one of the greatest of all times. But if you just have to shit on Michael Jordan and shit on every single player that played in that era, I'm just going to take you less seriously. So is what it is. Just put a little bit more respect on the 90s and every other generation and just older iterations of basketball, because half the time those old dudes, you know, standing there at 50, 60, 70 years old would be absolute problems if they were in the NBA today. I want to end on a positive note here, right? I just talked about something that I think is inherently terrible for basketball, all the discourse around shitting on the 90s and previous generations of basketball. That's terrible for the game and terrible for basketball. I want to leave you guys with something that I think is actually very good for basketball. And it's a bit funny that I'm doing this because I'm basically doing a free plug for possibly one of the most famous people in the entire world. I really think you guys should take a listen on LeBron and JJ Redick's podcast. It's called Mind the Game. I wasn't expecting to do a plug for this, but I watched the first, I think there's been three episodes at this point in time. I actually watched them on YouTube. I didn't just listen to them, so maybe that's why I was so infatuated by it. But I loved that podcast so much that I encourage all you guys to listen to it. It is, again, it's LeBron James, it's JJ Redick. I'm sure you've heard of those guys at this point. I think it's just a perfect balance of, like, you needed somebody to set up LeBron just from, like, a podcast perspective, right? Like, he's not going to be, he's no words with Wallace, right? He's not just going to be turning on the mic and you know, doing an outline and thinking of whatever comes to him. He's got a lot of going on. He's a very busy guy, much busier than I am. And so he really needed somebody to set him up, like a traditional podcast host. But, you know, JJ is obviously the perfect person for that, given he's actually hosted and managed a podcast that is performed at the highest levels while still being able to speak to the intricacies of playing the game at the highest level. And that is what they were able to pull off by this. And just like the way they set it up, if you guys haven't listened, like, they get into a conversation, you know, pretty early on, like 10 minutes into the episode, but they actually do like a foreword to each episode in which it's just JJ and he's breaking down all the terms, all the definitions, all the plays, all the actions that they talk about within that conversation. He records the foreword, you know, after that actual episode, so he's able to do definitions and visuals for everything that they talk about. That way you're literally learning. It's like going through like a glossary for that episode where you're learning definitions, you're learning what this action means. And so you're equipped with that knowledge as you go into the actual conversation. So that's just, it's pretty intuitive for them, I'm sure, but I thought that was just a really smart way to do things. And again, like, I'm familiar with a lot of the terms, but even for myself, like, as much as basketball as I watch and play to this day, it's been a very long time since I actually had a coach. Like, I did grow up playing organized basketball from 6 years old through high school, but it's been 9 years. I'm getting kind of old now. So it's been 9 years since I've had an actual coach, which was kind of a crazy realization. And you realize how some of those, that X's and O's stuff kind of escapes me with time. And so I thought that was really fascinating. And just the strategy behind it, like, again, the way that they get into the X's and O's while still being genuinely interesting to listen to. Like, I know I'm an absolute basketball junkie, so it's like the perfect product for me, but I do think like the average person who just watches the NBA casually and just wants to have a better understanding of what they're doing on the court would still find some of the things that they're talking about fascinating. And so I implore any basketball fan to give it a try. Let me know what you think. And it made me just question, like, it was such good content. It was something so unique and something that I enjoyed more than any other NBA content that I've consumed recently, that like, it did make me question for a hot second, like, is this going to be like the future of sports talk, right? Like a longer form series where you can really get into the weeds on stuff. Is that just more of the future, right? Like we're already seeing all of these athletes like with a podcast, with a platform now, doing some sort of sports media content where it did make me question, like, is this where everything is headed? Like more towards something like what we've seen with LeBron and JJ? And as much as I like it, I think the answer is no. Because what sports talk is at the end of the day, like, you're still always going to be second fiddle to, like, the sports talk radio where you could be on a three-minute drive to the post office and just, you know, throw on whatever your local station is and they're having an argument, like, they're doing the LeBron Jordan thing or, you know, they're talking about, like, how much of a disappointment this guy is or they're talking about who's under more pressure, like, Jason Tatum or Devin Booker, whatever, like, and that stuff is so easy to just like pick up on and understand and like be really engaged with for like 3 to 5 minutes and then just like move on. And then you turn off your car because you're at your destination or then you get distracted and you take a phone call, whatever. Like that's why First Take is set up the way that it is because people can get in and out with interacting with the content. And I just think that that's never going to be the case for something like what we have with LeBron and JJ Redick's podcast. But I could see that more stuff like that coming along, it's just never going to take over as like the mainstream. I could see something like this Mind the Game podcast with LeBron and JJ getting picked up by like a TV network and then it becoming like an actual weekly episode that also premieres on TV as well, because I really do think it's that good and it's that interesting. But it will be fascinating to see how this, you know, kind of sculpts sports media moving forward, because I do think the whole industry would be in a lot better place if more people made content like what LeBron and JJ Redick are doing. But in reality, it's going to be really tough to emulate. There's only so many guys that are LeBron James and JJ Redick. So because it is so tough to emulate, it'll be interesting to see how much of an impact that really has in the short term. So that just about does it, guys. Again, appreciate you rolling with me through kind of a weird episode here, just kind of giving you like a six pack of different ideas that have been on my mind as we prepare for the NBA playoffs. So that being said, I will be back with a more traditional podcast next week. I will give out my NBA awards picks, so I'm really excited to do some research, dial in for the last week of regular season action, and make my picks, share those with you guys next week, and then the following episode, we will do our NBA playoff preview and predictions after that. So that being said, guys, before I let you guys go, be sure to follow at Words with Wallace on everything. That includes Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you get your podcasts, on social media as well. I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, at Words with Wallace on all of those sites. I will talk to you guys next week. Peace.